Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 3rd, 2004. Today's session number is KAR 2004-01. Today's speaker is Ruth Kath. The lesson for today is the Sense of Vocation program at Luther College, focusing on advertising all students. Let's listen in.
Well, just a word about me. My name is Ruth Kath. I'm a professor of German at Luther.
And
yes,
sorry.
It's okay. We always have late students.
It would be me.
Sorry. Anyway, I've been at Luther for 25 years. I celebrated my 25th anniversary in May, and it is quite a moving time. But about 2.5 years ago, I was called upon to join the group who is working with the Sense of Vocation and to take over the church coordinator, church vocations coordinator position. It may seem odd to you that a teacher of German would be doing that kind of thing, but I had a midlife crisis about 10 years ago. I went back to school and did what I always wanted to do, which was to get a theology degree on the weekends. Saturdays, I commuted to Dubuque, Iowa, and got a degree in theology. It's helped me enormously, not only to do this, but to do German literature, which is so very much based on Judeo-Christian tradition. That's me. Anyway, about a year and a half ago, I was called upon to become the director of the program, and the person who was doing it wanted to go on sabbatical. So I'm very, very touched and flattered to be able to do that. Find it to be a real vocation. So in me, you have a person who's come through a clear vocation. So the title we have here is A Sense of Vocation. That's the name of the program at Luther. And I might say something about the grants in general. They're given by the Lilly Endowment, Incorporated. And that is not the same as Lilly Pharmaceuticals, but that is where the money is basically coming from. The endowment was established on its own to be separate many years ago, and for many years has funded church-related colleges and universities, done various things at seminaries. But this was a special call. And about the year 1998, Lilly had the idea to offer $2 million to church-related colleges and universities. And it went in three rounds. We were in the second round. So they did it in a particular way. It was to offer planning grants to a wide number of colleges. I think in our round there were 60 colleges that got planning grants of $50,000 apiece. We got that in 98. And spent a year working together, brainstorming about how we would spend $2 million if we should get it. And it was never guaranteed that we would. But already that process was wonderful. It was a marvelous beginning of conversations on the campus and a recognition of the strengths that we had in the way we were dealing with students all along. But also, of course, a recognition of where we could do better and where really money could help us do that. Well, I won't forget it. It was the 30th of November of 1999, almost at the end of the semester, and I had been called in to do a little bit of talk about this brainstorming for the Board of Regents. I was sitting there waiting for my turn, being kind of nervous about it, and I began to listen a little bit and hear this Board of Regents tossing around, well, you know, we could spend this much, and we're going to spend it over here, and we'll spend it. What am I doing? We don't have this money, and we have not got the assurance that we're going to get it. And then somebody said in the row, now that we have the Lilly grant, what? I screwed all these distinguished people. Well, they had found out about an hour before that. They'd gotten a letter, and no one had come over to tell me. I was quite thrilled. But anyway, and then began, of course, the process of, oh, Lord, we got the $2 million, now that we do. We put into place what we've been working on as a brainstorming committee. And that is what we basically have as a grant proposal. So we have this, and it's called the Sense of Vocation. It comes from, the name comes from our goals for academic achievement for students. And it says basically we promise to help students as we go through to gain a sense of vocation. That's not the new. That's probably 10 years old. But it was very much a part of what was in the student. So we just went ahead and yes, of course, sorry. I do have a rather soft voice, I'm sorry. And buses don't help either.
Yeah.
No,
my bus is
ache.
Yeah. A bus is really. Anyway, sense of vocation comes from the goals for academic achievement for students that had already been in place. Okay, let's go ahead and see if we can get this to go. Whoops, we bounced one. All right, well, I guess there's no way I can go back. But anyway, let me show you the logo a little bit later. Well, can you pop that back for me?
Yeah,
I'm
making
this.
This
one's over here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. This logo that was established when we got the grant is a sun kind of thing, but it is much more pathways that are leading out from the work that we do in the middle. So that was a very purposeful graphic design, and it appears on everything we've got except the pens. We couldn't get them on there, but it's an important part of what we do. And the lilac color has come out in all of the brochures we do and so forth. That's an important thing. So let's see if I can be gentle here. It's Richard Torgerson, our fairly new president. He's been on board about 5 years. Has been very, very active in Lutheran colleges, 5 different ones, I think, and has become the president in the last 5 years. An absolutely engaged, energetic human being, a marvelous person, very, very faith-driven, and a very good spokesman for the college. Works well with the administration, I think. May say that. Her husband is one of the vice presidents. I have not.
Are you saying that because I'm sitting here?
No, no. No, not in the 25 years have I seen an administration that pulls together the way this one does. And it's very exciting and an enormous help for me in the work that I do. Okay. He writes this: what a gift we offer students when we allow them to give expression to the people God created them to be. And that is the way he writes all the time, talking about vocation. Press it too hard here. Can you help me again?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm new at PowerPoint. This is my first attempt, so have patience. We did get the grant, we believe, because it's so ground into Luther already, what we were trying to do. This was an attempt to get it better, but it's so much a part of the Luther. This is a mission statement, so much a part of what we've been doing for a long, long time. As a community of faith, Luther College is committed to the Christian vision of service, and service is very much a part of what we're trying to do. The Lilly Grant is enabling us to do that part better, to do everything that we do better. You can imagine how wonderful it is to have all of this money. I might mention that I'm not trying to sell Luther College particularly, but to show you one area of vocation, the conversation about it, that is very well funded right now and happening all over the country. As I mentioned, there were 3 rounds of this, and in all, about 72 church-related colleges and universities received $2 million apiece. This has kicked off all kinds of vocation interest in the country. It's marvelous. And so you have here at Holy Village a whole week devoted to it, most of the summer talking about it. There's a whole raft of books that have come out, and just the beginning of that. So this is a great interest now, has always been, but greatly pushed by it. Okay, what was Lilly's purpose behind all of this? We believe that they saw quite rightly the decline in the number of ordained clergy over all the denominations, the mainline denominations. The lack of leadership that is coming along, and a great need that there is for leadership, both in the church and in the general populace. And so they decided to do this, but this was not something new for Lilly. Lilly has been plugging money into, for example, the Lilly Fellows Program at Valparaiso University. We have been part of that, Luther's been part of that since the very beginning, and I have been their representative for 12 years now, I think, bringing together church-related colleges and faculties to talk about how do we do Christian education within the colleges. Again, an odd thing for a German professor to be doing, but if the interest is there and the support for it, it is, we do it. Anyway, here was the reason that they put out these grants, to improve the caliber and to increase the number of ordained and lay leaders. And that becomes a very great thing for all the colleges as well. Lay leaders are the new pool for time. Ordained people, yes, of course, and we want that to happen. That the support for lay people is there as well. Both those who are working directly in the church and those who will do church work at some point in their lives. You may become a member of the council, the church council, or do youth work, or volunteer in the nursery at churches and so forth. All of that supporting this. And then broaden out that to help all students with religious wisdom about vocation. And that's certainly part of our grant. To talk with all the students who come to Luther about what your vocation is, how do you get there, how do you talk about it, what are the obstacles or the questions. Okay, I need to take it gently here. I'm not gentle. Let's come out here. Well, all right, thank you. I'm very happy he's here. The authors of the grant are two marvelous people. On the left, you have Mark Mobley, who's been a professor of English at Luther College. If you had him in class, that's great. Mark has also been the director of the Paideia, the Freshman Studies Program, over the last several years, and the editor of our college journal. Very, very intelligent and articulate person with a marvelous vision for where this could go. And it was his vision, particularly, that got put on paper. And then working with him to write the whole grant application, Nancy Barry, professor of English, longtime person at Luther, and a real charger, absolute wonderful. You're smiling, she's great. And the two of them together are absolutely dynamic. So they work together with a lot of us to do that, and they end up writing it. You can imagine they're rather good writers. Okay. And I don't know who this person on the left is. The person on the right is Yang Chi Li, our new registrar, been registrar for about 2 years or so. He is actually from computer science and comes from Hong Kong originally. Very, very good in business and wonderful outreach to students. We love him. Now functioning as a registrar, but also as the head of the advising half of the grant. And I started out as the church vocations coordinator, so that's the other half of the grant. One is advising for all students, the other half of church work, and then eventually came around to do the whole thing, as well as the church vocations continuing. I did it. And here's the woman who keeps us all together, who also helped to put this PowerPoint together, Connie Barkley, our program secretary, who's finding in all of this, funnily enough, a vocation. Great. Okay. What I want to do today is give you simply a sample of the 25 initiatives that are in this grant. You can imagine my life is kind of complicated balancing all of these, but it's great. One of them has to do with reading and books. So that was a real big chunk of money that we had, and we said the way to get to people is to help them read in college. And so we went with library acquisitions, and we have, I think, $5,000 or $6,000 a year just for vocation books. People are able to say, I like this book by Parker Palmer. I think other people would enjoy it. So would you order it? And we'll get some copies. And here are just some things. We had Sharon Parts come to talk with us, and this very famous vocation book, Big Questions, Worthy Dreams, Mentoring Young Adults in Their Search for Meaning, Purpose, and Faith. And then Brian Mahan, Forgetting Ourselves on Purpose, Vocation and the Ethics of Ambition. We can keep up with the most modern books. And of course, a lot of this, because we're at the college, is focused on 18 to 22 year olds, but not necessarily. We're looking at the bigger picture. We have, as also a part of the grant, reading grants, where faculty or staff, students as well, can propose to us if they'd like to do some independent reading. It would help them to focus on their direction of vocation. So here is Kim Powell, who looks a bit older right now, but she's a mother of four children, four adopted children, absolutely wonderful person. but she is also in communication and director of women's studies. So she said, I'd like to take some time out next summer and do some reading. So proposed a list of books and did a beautiful proposal for us and then fed us what she had learned, told us what she'd done, and helped us out with it. Thank you.
Yep.
This was her proposal. She wanted to look at teaching and service learning and missions. That was a new area she wanted to pick up. And she wanted to model speeches of diversity, since in women's studies she does a lot with diversity, with getting women's voices out there. That would be a new way for her to lead that she hadn't done when she was studying in college. And she wants to teach some more about public speaking. So that works out well. I did an absolutely marvelous application. We had a terrific group of women come together. The very first year we had the grant, it was led by Ann Hyam, whose picture you'll see in a little bit, who's the vice president, another vice president for student life. And she got a whole group of women, faculty and staff together to read. And they would read once a month and talk about what they'd read the whole year long. And we gave them a nice chunk of money. Said, go and have dinner together, we'll buy the books for you, and then you go ahead and do the discussions, and then feed that back to us, see what you've learned, how that can help students as you go through. Here was their idea. They wanted to read a bit about helping young women students, since they're all very involved in that, to look at calling in the midst of life transitions. A number of them are in this group are people who work with the young women having trouble. The counselor in there, for example, Ann Hyam, vice president for student life, deals with kids who are about to leave Luther, does the exit interviews. These questions are very much on their minds. What happens when you get into trouble in life, and can you use that time to move forward? Yes, absolutely. They wanted to ask them to consider their own goals. Never mind what your father or your mother wants. I mean, think about that, yeah. But now move as a young person into your new goals that are yours, ones that you've taken charge of. People are doing that throughout college, but that's an important part of what they were talking about. And then new approaches for life transitions. When you get into a tough time or when you move from college out into the world, using that time in a very purposeful, conscious way is what they wanted to do. And then the centrality of faith in transitional times. And I think lots of us as adults know that. We've been in tough times ourselves. We've learned it. But kids who are 18 to 22 don't always know that. And young women particularly, I think, have a tough time with it. So this was an attempt to cultivate that.
Ruth, how many might be in that group?
In the women's group?
Yeah,
I believe there were 20.
And they're all students.
These were all faculty and staff.
All faculty and staff.
Okay. Then they will take it to the next step and bring it to the students. This was just the beginning, the first year.
Okay.
And then we had a men's reading group that said, hey, those would be a really good idea. And so the men have gotten together this last year and read together. It's quite revolutionary for Luther staff and faculty together, coaches. Everybody who normally wouldn't be talking together now were. This was their idea. They discovered that meeting with other men and talking about vocation was really something. That was exciting for them, and I don't blame them. It was neat. And then their idea was to share experiences with male students. They said, male students, particularly athletes, for example, don't talk about vocation. They don't talk about their transitions, you know, in general, at any rate. So we want to help them do that, since we figured this out, we're going to go with it. So let's sit down and we'll explore vocation together. And what we'll do is to sit down and talk about it in the cafeteria, so that other people can see us males talking about vocation and join us, or do it themselves. So that modeling became an important part of it. And this has absolutely taken off. They're going to do a wonderful new piece this summer and this fall, all the whole year. With male students, big groups of athletes in the group. Another area was sending faculty and staff off to vocation conferences, and this to then be filtered down into the students in some way. This is a terrific guy we've got. Well, he is a guy, Guy Nave, one of our new faculty in religion. He's a Baptist minister and absolutely dynamic. The students love him. But he went to this conference, A Narrative World, The Theological Implications of Story, held way off campus. It was fairly expensive to get him there, but he came back and told us about it and told us how that was impacting him and thinking about it. So we helped him get there. And you'll know these two. They also went off on the conference, sharing stories of vocation was the conference they went to, how Christian faith can sustain the life of the mind. And they came back and talked to us about what that did for them. David by preaching in chapel, and Carla by talking in a brown bag seminar, and then, of course, incorporating it into her work. Okay, and here is Nancy, a very different direction of the grant. You've heard a lot of this focused on faculty and staff. That is one of the thrusts of the grant, that we can educate the students by educating the faculty and the staff. But we do, of course, have pieces for students, and this is one of them. We pick out senior students, usually, who have been very, very good in class, and ask them to become a part of the teaching piece. Nancy is the director of that program. These are peer mentors. What we're hoping is, of course, that you know, if you're having trouble in German, maybe, and you want to sit down with a senior and get a little help with that, it might work. But eventually, down the road, she might ask you, what are you thinking about doing? What happened to you in this class? Or is this triggering anything about what you might like to do in your life? And this is what it looks like when I'm a senior. That's a question I had when I was a first-year student. So peer mentoring, very well. And I'm going to do a course now in January, which I've done about four times already, taking students to Rome and to Wittenberg, talking about the joint declaration between Catholics and Lutherans. And I'm going to take a peer mentor with me this time. It's of course, to be an education for the younger students, but also an education for the older student who sees they have some teaching ability, may or may not like to do this. This is a wonderful vocation conversation that happens on the side. We have here a group. This is the young woman in the middle, Erica Strandyard. If you know the ELCA office, it's Jonathan Strandyard, who's working with church ministries. This is his daughter, his younger daughter, who's a junior, I think, at Luther. And she, sophomore, sorry. And she is sitting here together with Paideia students. There is no teacher in the classroom this day. And she is helping them to go through some text, but also talking about what her life as a sophomore is like. So that they'll get there and ask the same kind of questions she does. She's a marvelously articulate young woman. Okay.
No nap.
I was doing fine with that thing. I just missed this. What an odd book, huh? 1818 text, Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. Anybody read this?
I'm working on it.
Are you? Good for you.
Yeah, thank
good
you.
For you. Well, you're
but
part
get
of
through the introduction, that's the worst part.
We have a new student orientation as we begin school in the fall. We've decided to stop playing frisbee on the front lawn of the library to orient them to college, and actually take them in to a freshman reading class, and have them in the summer read something that has to do with vocation. This would not necessarily be what you would think of in vocation, but it works really well. And the whole group of English professors has sat together for a long time arguing every summer about which book it ought to be. This is this year's book, so here we have lots of people on the campus reading this book. And the thrust behind it is when the kids come to college, it will be not only their English professors who discuss it with them, but all the rest of us as well. I have finished this. I have lots of questions I can ask my advisees and students when they come in. It'll be fun. It's an unusual text. We're getting some kind of funny looks about it. All right. The new student orientation themes are education and personal development and vocation. And those are all things that occur in this text. Here is the question for Frankenstein. And I say Frankenstein. Who was I? What was I? Whence did I come? Not exactly modern English, but gets their attention. What was my destination? All vocation questions that we can use to join into the conversation with first-year students. It becomes an all-college project of reading. As I say, we've offered these books on Frankenstein to all of the staff, all of the faculty, some of the spouses, and so forth. And we've got janitors reading this. We've got coaches. Everyone will have read this book if we can help it. And we've given them the book. And we've done this now for 3 years. It's been a wonderful project. And it's a welcome to new students. Instead of throwing them a frisbee, throw them a book. Say, this is what we are reading. And then we model, in the meantime, the academic community that we really are.
Ruth,
yes.
On that same vein, yeah. Do the upperclassmen, are they invited to be a part of it?
Yeah, they just kind of filter in.
Do they?
Ooh, I love that book. I love one of those.
Yes. What have been the other ones you've written?
Lesson Before Dying.
Yes, Lesson Before Dying was last summer, and then The Color of Water.
That's
a wonderful book. You do too.
What's the next one? Lessons of Dying.
Lessons Before Dying.
Before Dying. Okay. I think I may have seen that.
Yeah, I can write you the titles down. It's really good. Well, this is the other end of the spectrum. When we have seniors leaving us during commencement, we have a ceremony at the end of the year before baccalaureate and commencement, before the really big things happen. It's part of the Sunday worship service, and particularly students who have discovered a call to church ministry of some kind or a call to mission work are being sent out. So this is a sending ceremony, kind of a commissioning ceremony. And we put into their hands at our cost this book, which is marvelous, and they take it with them. Chapters into verses, lots of beautiful poetry that has a scriptural base to it. I can recommend it very much. It's a wonderful work. Okay. Another part to the grant is curriculum development. We want to really have lots of courses that have conversations about vocation. One of them's next door. We sponsored a competition last November among faculty. Can you come up with a vocation course? Anything that has to do with the conversation about where somebody will go with their lives. And John Moeller was one of the people who came up with this course on political leadership. Vocation, political leader. We had a couple of others, which I'll show you in just a second, but this is what we're trying to do with this. We'll have another competition, 3 more winners this next year. And by the time we have the life of the grant over with, we'll have a good number of vocation courses running. Here he is. Well, his topic was vocation, political leadership, and it's interesting. I shouldn't tell you this, but how much the professor has to struggle with the idea. The education is happening for the professor as well as for the students. This is a new area. This is over everything, every time. So he's had some good conversations with me about it and with other people as well. He calls vocation now the V word.
He hasn't decided to run in
elections. I don't think so. This shows John in front of the Luther Lock Church Leaders Retreat this summer. We have had 14 church leaders come to campus. And yes, there we are, part of Luther Lock. And he is,
it was about time.
Doing his course, fairly much the same course that you've got going on here. We chose him out of the three to come to hold him at our expense and then to be here doing this. So he's kind of excited about it, I think. That's great. Another one is a young woman who has been teaching Russian studies at Luther. She's an American. She's been running the Concordia Language Village for a long time as the dean of the Russian camp. Very, very good in Russian. And she came up with the vocation of a dissident, looking at the writings of Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And offered this during Luther Log, and boy, it was neat. She wrote me some emails when she lives right across the hall from me and said, this is so amazing. These people even know who he is. it was quite exciting for her. So again, the education of the professor who gets into this conversation and learns something about not only the older students who appear for Luther Log or for Holden Village, but also about the topic itself. Yeah, get some new thinking going. And here are two, the vice president for student life and one of our very popular management an accounting professor, Ramona Nelson. These two very, very good friends, beside that, have worked up this course for a long time for undergraduate students, but decided that they would do it for Luther Locke with a location connection to it. And it was a marvelous thing. You couldn't believe what they were hearing. And the church leaders sounded just to be terrific. Okay, this was their topic, finding life and vocation, or who do I want to be when I grow up? Of course, you've got 50 and 60-year-olds sitting in the group. That's the theme of vocation, but it doesn't stop once you get to be 22 and you have a BA. I hope we know that. If we don't, we'll learn it. But this is very much what they were doing and drawing out the strengths. So now that these three groups have done this course in the summertime, and part of the deal is that they will plug it into the undergraduate curriculum that works all the whole year. And I think do things like hold a village and spread the word about it. On this particular one, we also discovered that it would be an important piece to offer to all sophomore students. Sophomores have gone through the freshman year, first year, and said, oh wow, college is exciting, and not quite to the point where they can go overseas in the junior year, and certainly not ready for senior year, for going out into the world. And they're kind of bored a lot of the time, and very unsure of themselves at that point. So we thought, this is a good time to plug in a vocation course, and we're going to do that. We're going to be working on it and trying to do that. Well, this whole deal is to revise the current courses that we've got, plug in vocation conversation in some way. Certainly what we've done with Mona and with Anne, develop new courses, such as John Moeller's or Laura Eden Nelson's with the, and Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And then I want to talk just quickly about the last one. At Luther we have a paideia. Paideia, a Greek word meaning education. It's been in place, funded by the Exxon for about 25, 30 years or so. No, probably 30 years. It was in place when I came. Sorry? Yeah.
It was there when I was there.
Yeah, okay, good, good. It is history and English together, taught by history and English faculty. Boy, the conversations that go on there. It's great. It helps writing, but also it has various units. And then, well, sometime during the time, usually junior, senior year, there's a capstone course that has ethics to it. As a religion faculty person helping to teach it, and it can go in any direction. Some of them are, for example, decision-making in U.S. schools. And so a faculty member will be there to talk about ethics in schools, but also education people working together. There are various ones, like environmentalism and so forth. But, a long time ago, probably before we got the grant, the faculty decided to put vocation in as part of the theme. And so every one of these capstone courses has vocation in it, some kind of conversation that goes on. With the grant, we were able then to also offer some funds to help that. So two faculty, Jim Martin Schramm, who's connected to Mary Schramm, her son-in-law, teaches a course together with a biologist, and we were able to give them funds to actually take the students who are in this environmental ethics course out to a coal burning factory so that they could see and stand on the coal and see what this looks like. It no longer was theory, it was really in practice, and it changed things. So that's the quick goal of the whole thing. I might just say something about the advising that we we're supposed to be really attacking today. I'll just say it very quickly. The second half of the grant is advising, and we have been working with faculty to learn to advise better. We were doing very well helping them to figure out that they needed to go to this course or that course, but we're not asking them very well, what do you want to do with this? How does this look overall? They would run in at the last minute and get the papers signed. Overall. And so we also have realized that the faculty that we've got now are not the kind of faculty that we used to have when I came, for example. Many of them have not come through church colleges. They have no idea of what that looks like. You know, the very idea of bringing up Christianity in a classroom would be
an enormous, faux pas probably for them. Many of them have not come through liberal arts colleges. They have no idea of this idea that you want to have a broad background. They've gone through a very, very secular and very directed vocational area. And so when you have to go into a Paideia course and teach with somebody else or the broad things, it's foreign. It's very odd. So at least we need to talk about it. And so we work very hard to help our faculty, particularly the younger ones, learn to do these kinds of things, to be comfortable with it. Not only with the mechanics of advising, how do I take biology and get through in 4 years, but also with how do I help a kid decide whether they're actually talented enough or gifted enough or called enough to be a doctor, for example. And how do I help that same kid when they realize that they're not? We want to have them helped, and we need to see the versions of what they can be in all of their strengths, not just in what my specialty is, biology or whatever else. So that's been wonderful. It's necessary at Luther because we have about 150 faculty, full-time faculty, and over the last 10 years we have hired 50 of them, new people. We are really rapidly turning over. It's just the aging of the faculty that's come about. So this has come in.
What's your student population?
3,000, about 3,500 now.
And what's the faculty student ratio approximately?
About 15 to 1, but growing. The college is growing. And that's part of this change that we're feeling. Those of us who are older have been around and were wonderfully mentored, as I mentioned last night. Do not find that happening, or have not found that happening. So we want to pull through and make sure it does. Part of that is advising. And so this summer we had a wonderful workshop, quite an exciting one, in June. For 3 days we brought together, 25 faculty, I think, or 26. We asked them to come in pairs of an older faculty and a younger faculty. So somebody very experienced in advising, been there at least 5-6 years, if not longer, and then somebody who has just started out in the last 2 or 3 years, and to sit together and to talk together the whole 3 days as we went through things. It's terrific conversation. People who hadn't known each other. And so, yeah, much more than the mechanics. What do you do when a kid comes? It was an awful time in November. We have lots of kids who come to Luther College because it's so known for music. Who think that they want to major in music, and everyone in the town that they've come from has told them they are so talented they must become a musician. And then in November, the grades kind of come out from the music department, and the rest of us get the Kleenex out and help them through this. It's a transitional time, a good time for advising, a really good time for saying, oh, look, yeah, I know music is good, but look at this other thing that you've got in writing. It's just fantastic. Let's see what we could do with this. Yeah. Try out this direction a little bit. Try out that. What else are you interested in? It's a marvelous thing. So to help our younger faculty to see these times of transition, to expect them and to know how to talk to the students when they happen. And also for the younger faculty to get comfortable, as we hope the older faculty are, in modeling vocation to the students. What's happened in my life? It's not okay to talk about that in lots of places, but it's okay to talk about it at Luther, and we give them the permission to do that. What's happened to you in your life that's steered you in one direction or the other? It's been an opening.
I can appreciate that if they haven't had that kind of advisor in their life through their 18, 19, 20-year-old stage.
And maybe never.
Yeah, they maybe never been modeled to before.
That's right. Some of them, I can tell you, are very scared. Feel it to be an enormous pressure and a sense of, I don't want to get in their faces, in the students' faces. That's private information. I don't belong here. You don't want to get in their faces, but you do want to ask. And asking is okay. So the kind of caring community that is there for students and can help them in good and bad times. It's quite exciting for us. And the other piece to it is a faith and learning workshop, which we've had to begin about 5 years ago or so before the grant began. We took it over. Younger faculty coming in
have a very difficult time, as I said, talking about faith anywhere on the campus. It's very normal for the rest of us older ones to come to chapel and to talk at chapel, to do chapel talks several times a semester. But it's not normal for a lot of the younger faculty. They have never done that sort of thing, and they need some help with it. And so we get together a group right in the second year, the beginning of the second year, right as school starting, and three of us, a crazy team of three, talk about faith and learning. We talk about the mission statement. If you promise you won't tell, I'll tell you what we do the second day. We sneak up on them in the morning, first thing, and we say, take this overhead, and together with somebody else in the group, write down what the mission statement of the college is. Oh my God, my contract! Oh God, I'm just sweating. Well, I got a few lines in there, and you know, we put them up, and we have a good laugh, because we've gotten pieces of it, obviously. But you can't recite, it's a quite a long thing. We can't recite the whole thing from beginning to end, nor do we want them to. But it's already, it's okay to be. We show them then quickly, quickly how it's changed over the years. The commitment to the old Norwegian Lutheran Church, for example, it's opened up, and how it's opened up so that there is room for everybody, whatever their background has been, to come into a college and help the students. They go out feeling okay. Still have a contract, that's all right. This kind of effort is what we're doing in the grants. We're very, very pleased with it. And, as we continue the week, if you are able to be here, I'd like to hear some about your memories of people who have helped you. Because part of this deal about being here is having a conversation with the people who know best about what this looks like on the other end. And that would help me to hear. So, have questions at all?
I have a comment, I guess.
Yes.
What you said about your faculty puzzled me and confused me. About all these young faculty coming in, for whom the notion of integrating faith and learning in the classroom is a foreign concept, the liberal arts education is a foreign concept, and yet Luther pegs its identity on that, the integration of faith and learning.
That's right.
And vocation is God's calling and finding one's gifts. So
that's right.
I remember when I went to Luther, I went there because I thought that was important, and I had a lot of faculty for whom it seemed not to be important.
Yes.
They seemed to have little pigeonholes.
Yep.
You're seeing, so why are those faculty being recruited? It's like the college is building a barrier to itself. If you have to, after two or three years, take these faculty members and say, please, this is our mission, this is what we're about. Can you take it on?
We've already asked them that question before they get there.
Why is
that
is
their problem.
I think that's a really good question.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
Why aren't you talking to the mission, the people that...
It's because academia has changed completely. You no longer get, for example, in religion, people who are ordained pastors coming on board to teach religion. What we get is academic people who are very, very good, but they need nurturing and they need mentoring into that piece. They come with a lot of gifts, and they do come clear about what Luther College is about. They're ready to go on board with it. They tell us that at the beginning. We're really clear about it when we hire people. But they have not had the practice in places that they've gone to graduate school of integrating that in the classroom or in advising. So it isn't that they're bad people or that they're inadequate people. They're not. They're enormously gifted people academically, and we can see that. So we're very careful in the recruiting process for faculty and staff to pick people we can see potential in. And I don't want to say that every single faculty member we hire has absolutely no idea about it, but we do see this trend happening, and they bring such strength to the college.
I think I can understand a little bit about what's happened, because certainly since my graduation from the college in 75 and then going into education, I worked in several, had the opportunity to be in several different academic environment or educational environments, elementary and high school in particular. The word, first of all, I'm a musician, so by nature, it's comfortable for me to
set my curriculum around the season of the year. However, I have had to become extremely cognizant, in particular, my most recent job was in a Montessori environment. You don't lift up your faith in a natural way. I noticed that my own children, who were in a public education through eighth grade, I moved them into a Catholic high school, and they were amazed that when Advent began, the Christmas carols would come over the loudspeakers in the morning as they would arrive, and they thought that was just almost out of context. It was like, we're hearing church music in school, and Mom, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. And so I can appreciate the kind of our new young people who may have come through a public education where you just didn't go there. Mm-hmm. It's got to feel very different now mm-hmm. to be able to go there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Luther has done this for a long time. Here I am. I came through secular universities only. I went to Syracuse University as an undergraduate, University of Connecticut for a master's degree, University of Iowa for a PhD. Mm-hmm. The first time I came to Luther College, I had an advanced literature class in German, and a young man, whose name I don't remember, bright red hair, whose answer to every question I asked about literature was Jesus Christ. Oh no, what have I done? How am I gonna do this? That was an anomaly. I think he was just kind of very strong, but anyway, that wasn't the answer, by the way. No, and so I needed to be nurtured, and as I mentioned these two women last night, they did a lot to help me become comfortable with Luther College, because they could see in me some gifts of being able to do this. And of being a help to it. But obviously, you don't hire somebody who is so anti. That isn't going to work. But what a wonderful person you have. And so I think we have a number of stories of people like that. It's exciting. Yes, ma'am.
I grew up Lutheran and mm-hmm. went to Lutheran. And I think the old Lutheran way, maybe other churches as well, but it was a state church and it was the church of your community. Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about our faith. Mm-hmm. And I went to Luther College, and faith wasn't bad there, but it wasn't really talked about. Mm-hmm. I learned to talk about it in interdenominational Bible studies, yep. not in my own church.
Yep.
And that has been just a blessing to me.
Yep. Well, that kind of push is coming from other people coming into the Luther family.
We went to Luther
Log. To talk.
Yeah, we went to Luther Log in about 88.
Yeah.
And they had different professors give the little chapel thing. And they said they were doing that now,
yeah.
a regular chapel, and it was marvelous
yeah.
for people to hear other than the pastors talk about the faith.
Yes. It's wonderful. Part of the kind of conversation we're trying to have, and the vocation program has been able to fund that avenue more and more. It also becomes a part of the landscape when I can call on a John Muller to do this kind of thing. I can send him into chat room. You know, he's comfortable talking about politics and vocation. You know.
Is Luther ecumenical?
Oh, very. Very, yes. In fact, how nice of you to ask. I just finished a book, writing a book about it.
It's in German, though.
And I want to tell you that the last down to visit Luther this spring is a Muslim student.
Yeah.
So all that more thing.
Yeah.
So this yeah. it's very ecumenical. Yeah.
And that calls all kinds of conversations mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. People who are on one side and say, no, nope, only Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
How much we're missing if we do only that. Beautiful gifts.
I think it's important. I have sons studying there now, but I love the fact that they get the opportunity to meet people of other faith and have these kinds of contacts, opportunities both in the classroom and in the cafeteria to learn about people of other faith, other culture. Writing.
And I won't kid you, we're struggling with it sometimes, mm-hmm. very much. Probably 7 years ago or so, there was an idea that came, I think, from the students in the student congregation to develop an interfaith room, simply an empty dorm room where Muslim students could go or others of other faiths. And, you know, I think there was a pillow on the floor or something. Man, it's a group of Lutheran students, particularly, that raised up and said, absolutely not. Not at our college. What are you thinking? So this kicked off a good conversation. I eventually got pushed through so that there was this room and then nobody was interested in it anymore. Only college students are sometimes. But no, there are struggles, real, real big struggles. But valuable things happening, valuable conversations going on because of that.
About what you were saying about the, now I forgot what it was. I think it was you saying about, the professors talking about their, someone other than the pastors talking about.
Yes,
I served the Lutheran Seminary in Berkeley as admissions director and seminary pastor, and that kind of desire for what you're describing doesn't change. I think it's a generational thing right now, where students, even by the time they're in seminary, they're interested in the information that the faculty have to give them, but they're just as interested, if not more interested, in the faculty as people,
yeah,
and as Christians and as mentors. And so our worship, every time we worship, there are faculty who preach and preside.
Mm-hmm.
And students say, I can remember from when I was a student, just how meaningful that was. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's one thing if the worship professor is presiding or the preaching professor is preaching, that's really not that exciting. But when the pastoral care professor is presiding at worship, you have kind of a different, you know, it's a different way of looking at this person as a model of what we're trying to become. So in the seminary, it's here's this person acting as a pastor, being a pastor, which is what I want to be. And I think the same thing is true in colleges and elsewhere. In congregations as well, where lay people are asked to preach, or I think even better, when older people are asked to speak at confirmation, in confirmation class, where now ninth, eighth, and ninth graders are hearing from people their grandparents' age about their faith and what it's meant to them. And so it's interesting to hear you say that about that.
One of the most effective chapel talks this last year was a young woman who runs the chemical stock room for running chemistry. She came up and in front of the pulpit, she mixed two chemicals together and just kind of stood there and watched them bubble and they solidified. She said, see? Who else would have had that?
Yeah.
No professor of pastoral care.
Right.
How effective that for drawing the chemistry students in and everybody. We have not forgotten that.
Well, I think it's a priesthood of all believers,
yeah,
that we still have a God.
Yeah.
Maybe we're getting better, but
and,
we still separate clergy from lay.
Sure. This a good push here to connect them on all kinds of levels if we can.
My only other comment would be it seems that this grant maybe could be explored even to building maybe there's a way for community people or mm-hmm. like, you know, people like myself to have a weekend blitz of vocation,
yeah,
update or something of that sort.
Okay. I haven't gone through all the 25 initiatives mm-hmm. here today.
Okay.
So there are
some of those.
Yeah. We have for prospective students. We have them for current students, a lot of them for faculty and staff, and that includes, in fact, on the 16th of August, all of the support staff is coming together for Vocation Day.
Mm.
You know, all of the cleaning people and everybody who drives vans and
the
parking
wild
meter
week
van.
Of Lily Grant, the
sorry?
Wild Week.
Wild
week,
week with the kids, yeah,
which
yeah.
was a Holy Iowa Youth Leadership Discipling
right.
event, which brought in kids.
Yep.
That are, you know, leaders in their church.
Yeah, yep. That goes on every summer. Church leaders, we've got workshops going on. I'll talk some more about that this week, but We have parts for alumni both off the campus and on, and so it's spread through everybody. So I've just highlighted a few things this morning.
I don't know if college students would be able to grasp this, but even just tying the seed of the idea of what you choose to do now may well change once or many times in your life.
Oh, yeah.
And I think particularly about a woman I've known for many years. She was a church organist for 20-some years, also a church secretary for 9 years, and now she's an associate in ministry.
Yeah. That's important. And I think that's where the chapel talks come in.
Yeah.
And
your career, which, I mean, your work within the church may change, but you may change careers dramatically.
Absolutely.
When I was a freshman in college, I remember during orientation, the dean said, the average person changes careers, not just jobs, but changes careers 7 times from the time they finish college till the time they retire. And he said, most likely, that seventh career, the career that you're going to retire from, doesn't exist as you sit here as a freshman in college. It's something that hasn't even been invented yet. So I think that's kind of a big way of looking at it and saying, you know, your vocation, it could be a number of different things at a number of different times. And lifting up your vocation as a student right now, I think, is important as well. Saying that this is what you're called to do right now. And it may lead to something else. So
I'm sort of mentoring by email my niece, who really needs a kick to get out of the house. She's 24. And she's struggling with the whole idea of going to college and what's it all about and everything. And she said, why do you have to have all those generals? You have to have all those general courses, you know. And I wrote back to her this great big long essay about that whole thing. And I said, you know, I think that the general courses have meant more to my life than the ones that got more specific later on. And I started at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and they required all teachers to take speech, art history, and music history. I didn't get the art history because I transferred to Lutheran. But the speech in high school and college were my worst grades. And yet now I've given sermons.
Yes.
So it has meant a lot to me. And music history, and because I love to listen to music, and you know, and so I was telling her that, and it really opened her eyes, I think.
And I would say, as an advisor and a longtime teacher, the fact that you are now reaching out to your niece,
yeah,
able to converse with her about what you learned is perfect vocation work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good for you. And good luck with it. I think you're probably going to make some progress. Oh, it's probably about time for lunch. So thank you very much for your attention and
thank you
for your input. It's wonderful to hear from you.
Thank you.
They said lunch was
buffet,
not two settings.
Okay.
A buffet?
So we better get to